owners of every property type, every commercial property type, really should be taking this time to reevaluate their investment strategies, their portfolio, and determine which assets are still going to represent value for them going forward, and which ones are maybe not the best to hold. Now is the perfect time to sit down and reimagine your investment strategy for your real estate, because your plans 2 years ago should be radically changed by what we're working on today. And so, you know, those things that don't make sense anymore, you should get rid of them, and you can allocate those resources into something that has a stronger growth outlook.
This is the Lodging Leaders Podcast with John Albano
and Judy Maxwell.
Session number 302.
Welcome to the Lodging Leaders Podcast, where top performing hoteliers and hospitality industry experts share powerful insights and actionable advice to help you grow your portfolio. And now your hosts, John Albano.
Hey, Lodging Leaders, thank you so much for tuning in today. You can find the expanded multimedia report for this episode at lodgingleaders.com/302. Value judgment. Hotel asset pricing in COVID-19 age is different from previous recessions. HVS, a hotel appraiser and broker, has appraised more than 1,000 hotels since the start of the coronavirus pandemic a year ago. In that mix are 140 properties that HVS has tracked since 2017. The company reported in November the subset has lost 24% of its pre-COVID value, falling from $6.6 billion to $5 billion. All is not lost, however. HVS notes it reassessed the hotel's values at the low point of the COVID-19 cycle and expects the assets will eventually regain their pre-pandemic values. In this episode of Lodging Leaders Podcast, we explore the state of hotel values, as well as what may lie ahead with regard to transactions in 2021 as the spread of COVID-19 continues to stifle lodging performance. We feature Rod Clough, partner and president of the Americas at HVS, John Chang, senior vice president and national director at Marcus & Millichap Research Services, Daniel Lesser, founder, president, and CEO of LW Hospitality Advisors, and Joseph Yee, Chief Investment Officer at Real Hospitality Group. We here at Long Live Lodging and Lodging Leaders Podcast are passionate about covering the trends and issues impacting the hospitality industry. Evidence suggests you share our ardor. In the 2 years since we changed Lodging Leaders format, we've seen a 57% increase in the average number of podcast downloads. We plan some unique programming this year, including a special series commemorating Black History Month and a new podcast focused on the next generation of hospitality leaders. And we intend to keep on bringing you news and information that informs and inspires, especially with the remarkable challenges facing the industry today. We are dedicated to producing multimedia storytelling for the modern age of hospitality. We invite listeners to join our movement by subscribing to our podcast. We also invite hospitality businesses to sponsor our programs. We can help you craft your message to reach our growing audience of listeners and social media users. To learn more, visit us at longlivelodging.com, where you'll find our 2021 media kit and contact information. Lodging never sleeps. Lodging will endure. Long live lodging. Now, let's get back to today's report. Early in the coronavirus pandemic, Daniel Lesser of LW Hospitality Advisors in New York City was featured in a Lodging Leaders report, as well as our Lodging Stream digital conference, where he stressed it was too early to determine how significantly the crisis would affect hotel values. We got back to Lesser this month to find out what he thinks now.
You know, it's interesting. Many folks have asked about, you know, well, how has valuation changed compared to pre-COVID? And the reality is it hasn't changed at all.
Hotels are income-producing real estate, Lesser said, and that's the true value they bring to investors.
It always was, and still is today, and probably always will be in the future, cash flow, and more cash flow. Obviously, today, there's not a whole lot of cash flow, and the way assets are being underwritten by very smart, sophisticated investors who know and understand the space is very akin to looking at a brand new hotel that's opening up for the first time. Because if you think about it, whether a hotel's been closed these past couple of months, or even open and operating at 5 to 10%, right? For all intents and purposes, when the pandemic is behind us, and it's not a matter of if, it's when, we're going to see, and I believe it's going to be a fairly robust rebound back to pre-COVID levels in terms of demand for transient accommodations. And as the demand rises, the pricing is going to rise as well. I believe that if you don't have to sell right now, I'm not really sure why you would, right? But with that being said, it's already occurred and it will continue to occur, not out of choice that they're going to have to dispose of assets for a whole variety of reasons. If you just look at Q2 2020 compared to Q2 2019, major single hotel transactions, 10 million or more. Last year, Q2 2019, there were 35 trades at a total of $2.6 billion. Average sale price per key, $286,000. Q2 of 2020, there were 6 trades. That's an 83% decline. The total transaction volume was $246 million. That's more than a 90% decline. And then the average sale price, Q2 2020, was $169,000. That's a decline of over 40%, 4-0. And then you look at Q3 2019, there were 40 trades. Q3 2020, there were 12 trades. That's a 70% decline. So it's interesting. It's looking better, right? 70 is better than 83, but it's still horrific when you think about it. Total transaction volume, Q3 19 was 3.7 billion. Q3 2020 was 829 million. That's a decline of 78%. Better than the 91 the prior quarter, but still horrific. And then when you move into Q4 of 19, there were 54 trades. Q4 of 2020, there were 32 trades. So that represents a 40% decline in the number of transactions. So you can see the numbers are declining in terms of negativity from 83 to 70 to 41, right? What else is so interesting is that in Q2 this year, 2020, there were 6 trades. Q3, there were double. There were 12 trades. Q4, there were 32 trades. So the point is that as time is going on, we're definitely seeing the transaction market heating up, and it's only going to continue for each of the next couple of quarters. There's really little question about that.
Rod Clough, president of the Americas at HVS, also expects an increase in transactions this year, but the pricing trend will be different than just a year ago. Hotel businesses were charting years of strong performance with high occupancy levels and stable average rates. Investors viewed hotels as a good place to park their money.
At the beginning of 2020, there weren't alarm bells going off like this is about to end. So because of that, and because there was that balance, there was just this frothy time where there were plenty of buyers, lots of buyers looking for hotels, not enough sellers. And so sellers who did bring their hotels to the market were really able to obtain a lot of good offers, and they were able to pick not always the highest price. They picked the best price that would get them to a closing and get them through closing.
We asked Clough to share his view on the general state of hotel asset values today.
So what we've seen is this incredible range. There are some assets that are, for example, at the budget end of extended stay, where you might have only dipped 5% in ADR, in average rate, and occupancy hasn't declined at all. And so those values, we haven't really seen a decline because a buyer would anticipate having a recovery in that rate in the coming year. And if they're buying the asset off of the next 5 years, 10 years worth of cash flow, and you have a fully recovered cash flow, then asset values in parts of that sector aren't declining. On the flip side, there are some assets where we've seen the blow to NOI be so significant and the outlook for recovery is there, but it might not be for another 2 to 3 to 4 years, in some cases maybe longer than that. And for those assets, if the owner isn't able to hold and keep their asset through the downturn, then that's where you see the assets value declining pretty significantly. I wish I didn't have to say, well, it depends on the asset and it depends on the location, but it very much does. We saw an asset recently trade a Renaissance at LAX. I read somewhere that it traded at a 6.5 cap on 2019 NOI, which is a very strong cap rate in the world of hotel investments. It's a relatively low cap rate. And just applying it, basically not even looking at 2020 and looking at 2019, applying a pretty good cap rate to that and deriving your end purchase I think it has like around 500 rooms asset in a market, not even considering 2020, but just knowing that, well, in order to put your hands on an asset of that caliber in a market like LAX, where you're not really going to be able to feasibly build a 500 room upscale hotel, there are still buyers out there for those types of assets where they can have that longer term view of, well, even if it takes 3 years, let's say, for this particular hotel, and I don't know exactly how long it will take that hotel to recover, but say a hotel would take 3 years to recover. If it's a hotel that's in a location where land is scarce and construction costs are $500,000 per room, and they can get an asset at $180,000 per room, and it may even be, if the hotel's losing money, it would be a negative cap rate. Maybe they'll do that because they know that the risk of another hotel opening when there's this big of a gap between market value and construction cost is basically probably nil. You know, so there's that security that there won't be another 500 room hotel built across the street from it. And you're in an asset like LAX where over the long term, it will surely recover. And so in order to get into that market, you might have to put normal metrics aside. If you normally would buy a hotel on current year income at a 6 cap, you have to start to get creative. Like, well, really, what is this market value going to look like? What am I willing to pay to get into this market, even with a hotel that might be losing money today? And I don't know if it was, but even if it was, I know that however much time in the future, it will be bankrolling again, and I'll be able to dig my heels into a market that I've always wanted to get into. And so there are markets like LAX, there are other markets around the country that are highly sought after. And so those values may not have declined much at all, but then there are other markets where maybe the buyers aren't as frothy and there's just not as much interest in the market. Maybe the risk profile is too high. And so for those hotels, we have seen some assets decline in value pretty significantly.
John Chang is Senior Vice President and National Director at Marcus & Millichap Research Services. The real estate broker and investment firm is very active in the hotel sector, selling more properties than any other real estate company. Chang said, although the hotel industry's business performance was healthy pre-pandemic, hotel capitalization rates were relatively stagnant. He explains why.
Prior to the pandemic, hotel properties were selling at some of the highest prices on record. Full-service hotels were trading in the $230,000 per door range, and limited service hotels were trading in the $90,000 per door range. So the prices were high, but this was really tied to the operations, the operational metrics like occupancy levels, ADR, RevPAR, were all at or near record levels, and that drove values. The cap rates really hadn't moved that much. You know, they were still in that 7% to 10% range, depending on the asset, the tier of service, how they're flagged, their location, et cetera. So the values were really being driven by demand from tourism and business travel for hotel space, and that was supporting the underlying values.
Now, for those of us who are not knee-deep into hotel values, net operating incomes, and key performance indicators, we asked Chang to explain why a capitalization rate, or cap rate, behaves the way it does.
A cap rate is simply a measurement of yield on a property, right? So if I put in, $100, what's my return on investment over time? And so if you paid all cash for a property and it was $100 and you had a 7 cap rate, you'd get a 7% return on that money. So the returns that investors are looking for on the hotel properties really didn't change that much. But because the underlying revenues changed so dramatically, it really affected the valuations of those hotel properties. Now, there has been some upward drift on the cap rates since the onset of the pandemic. That's related to, you know, various risks related to how long it will be there. It's a question of whether or not that property has been well maintained and whether it's positioned to recover quickly. But essentially, the cap rate represents how much risk the buyer is willing to take and how much, the seller is willing to let it go for. So this is negotiated. Some properties, of course, are trading at a much higher cap rate. If they're in distress, they have some problems. They need some work on them. If they weren't cared for, if the owner didn't have enough capital to support that property. And of course, some are still trading at relatively low cap rates because those properties have performed better during the downturn than others.
Typically, owners preparing their hotels for sale might do some sprucing up to add value. Conversely, prospective buyers usually anticipate the brand and the lender will require a property improvement project as part of the transaction. But if the pandemic is to blame for a hotel's downturn in business rather than poor operations, prospective buyers and lenders may look at the deal differently than before, knowing that when the pandemic eases, business will eventually return to so-called normal.
Ultimately, investors are purchasing a cash flow, a future cash stream, an income stream. And so the PIP or a major remodel is not necessarily required because, you know, ultimately, if they have maintained the property through the downturn, if they've, you know, haven't had any adverse effects, and so their occupancy rates are down, their daily rates are down today. But, you know, suppose we have a vaccine tomorrow and everybody's back to traveling and the hotel's filling up again, that revenue stream recovers and therefore that value predominantly recovers. It doesn't require a major remodel. Now, again, if there's a property that has deferred maintenance or some other issues, those are obviously going to have to be taken care of as part of this process because that will affect its ability to fill up. It will affect its ability to maintain its rates and so on.
Brands require a PIP about every 5 years, whether the property is sold or not. Here's Clough with HVS on why an owner might want to undertake a PIP or a design refresh right now.
What we're seeing right now is a lot of hotel owners with the PPP money and with the forbearance that they're getting from lenders and just the workouts and help that they're getting from lenders is that there's not this colossal wave of foreclosure happening. And there's not a colossal wave of transactions happening. And so because of that, and hotels aren't trading hands at any high level, PIPs aren't being triggered. So surely if there's a 5 year or a 10 year PIP came up in this year of 2020, then there's most likely brands are working with the owners on extensions and giving them time to complete the PIP at times where they can maybe afford it a little bit better. We have been seeing some hotel owners that are capitalized and prepared going into this, still completing their PIPs during this year. And if an owner was able to do that, that's a dream scenario because you're able to get your property upgraded during a time of very low occupancy and have it ready to rock and roll coming out of this as a refreshed new property is just fantastic. I do think brands will be and are being somewhat forgiving, particularly on the timing. You will have to get your renovation done at some point. And because we won't see this huge wave of properties changing hands, there won't be like a massive PIP wave from that.
Clough expects to see a lot of hotels come to market in the first half of this year.
There's so many opportunistic buyers out there right now wanting to pick up assets. I think more and more buyers that are able to come to the table with financing in place is going to be key. And sellers are going to, there always needs to be that meeting of the minds where sellers are maybe able to, they're able to come off of the price 15, 20, 25% of what their market value was in 2019. And buyers are able to come in with enough financing in order to make that happen. That's what we need to have assets start trading. I think if sellers stay resistant and thinking that their assets are worth what they were worth in 2019, they're going to need to wait until that NOI recovers. We do think assets will again be worth what they were in 2019 for sure. But in the moment, if trades are going to happen, then sellers have to be willing to come off of that a little bit.
Many hotel owners have sought forbearance from banks on mortgage payments, and most franchisors have deferred fees during the coronavirus crisis. But the temporary hold on payments cannot last forever, and investors may be forced to unload properties to settle those accounts. Here's John Chang.
If they decide to sell the property, then they're going to need to, you know, cover those expenses, those deferrals. So whether that deferral is from the franchise, whether that deferral is from the bank, they're going to have to cover those expenses and bring it current in the process of selling their property. Of course, that's always going to depend on the individual agreements that have been made. But just as a general rule of thumb, you know, they're going to have to bring their accounts current when they sell the property. And so that's going to take some of the revenues or the income from the sale out of the deal. There's investors that are at this point selling their properties. And if they can just get out from underneath it, if they can break even against their debt, you know, they're okay with that in certain situations. It just really depends on the situation of the investor. The ones who are going to be selling are hotel owners who were not able to get a deferment from their bank. Maybe they had a CMBS loan and they just really haven't had any ability to work with their lender to set up some sort of a deferment. There's investors who simply need liquidity. They maybe are selling one property in order to build up a cash reserve to support other investments that they have so that they have the liquidity to save, you know, 4 out of their 5 properties or something like that. And then there's investors who, you know, are simply deciding to cut bait because, you know, they can take the loss on the sales price or they can try to carry the asset until the market revives, but they don't know how long that will be. So they may do the math and say, well, you know, my burn rate is this and I can still get, you know, whatever it is, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80% of the original value of this property. And so I'll take my loss in the sale rather than in the burn rate for an unknown length of time. So there's different reasons to sell.
Dan Lesser said there will be some distressed sales taking place this year. But for the most part, selling a distressed asset in a pandemic is not the same as buying a mortgage that's in distress because of poor management.
One of the key decisions is maximizing proceeds, right? I mean, obviously, sellers want to maximize the amount that they can achieve for their assets. And so, you know, there are going to be a number of questions that are going to need to be dealt with. You know, again, timing. Is this really the right time to be selling an asset? I think in the not too distant future, there will be a very compelling story for assets that have gotten beaten down because of the pandemic, but are fundamentally good properties with very good locations that have good stories behind them. And they might be under distress and duress again because of the economic climate in the world due to the pandemic, but there's so much money on the sidelines that's looking for these kinds of opportunities that I am convinced that over time, we will definitely see no shortage of distressed transactions, but because of all the money out there, the compelling opportunities will get bid up. And while a transaction may be distressed, it will not necessarily reflect distressed pricing.
While there may be a lot of dry powder in some private equity kegs, prospective investors will have to seek financing to complete the deals. Here's Rod Clough.
Another big component of it is, can you even get financing to pick up one of these hotels? So that's a big limiting factor. If a hotel is still on a downward decline of NOI, of net operating income, then a lender is probably going to be less inclined to place a new mortgage on a hotel in a declining environment like that. But if the hotel has begun to turn the corner, then we'll start to see that story play out in a little bit more of a favorable light. But a buyer can come to the table if they're very well established, they have a very strong banking relationship, they have a lot of assets on their books, and they have that kind of power of financing to come forward with, which some buyers certainly have, then that enables the deal to come to fruition. But that financing is super restricted right now. And so you may have an asset that is has those Renaissance LAX types of fundamentals and has a seller willing to part with it for $200,000 a key, which is a 2019 maybe market value. And you have somebody willing to buy it and has maybe the equity for the down payment, but they can't find the financing. And so if that piece doesn't come together, then the transaction ultimately won't either.
Joseph Yee is Chief Financial Officer at Real Hospitality Group, a third-party manager that also deals with acquisitions and investment process. He talked about what he sees and foresees with regard to hotel lending.
There's two types of financing, equity and debt. On the debt side, the market has effectively shut down for the first 3 months, if you want to say it that way. Of course, there are always exceptions to any part of this conversation, but somewhere around between March and let's say June, really lenders were very far in between. And similarly, as the financial market reacted last recession, the financial crisis, lenders were making loans, and once again, very few, were purely based on relationships. And these were generally smaller regional banks or commercial banks that were lending to best-in-class clients just to preserve that relationship. But off the street, you're not getting financing from the market. That market has opened up, let's say from July to October, it has opened up. Just a handful of players in the market, primarily debt funds, are filling the void. So groups, whether private equity or hedge funds, who have a lot of capital and they certainly have enough allocation available to get into this sector, have made that loan. That loan has been more expensive, of course. You know, I don't want to quote in the sense that, you know, every market, every project is a little bit different, but I'm sure the listeners will love something. So I will say about 8% over LIBOR. Since October, it has gotten a little bit better. It has opened up. So if you want to say the market has compressed its pricing by 100 to 200 basis points, so about 6%. From new construction perspective, those are very still challenging. You know, construction loans and construction financing usually is the last part of any recovery. And so that's going to take a bit of time from a lending perspective. And lastly, what is probably the most important to note, CMBS market or the conduit lending market represents roughly about a third of our business, of our hotel financing debt side. That obviously relies heavily on trailing 12 revenue to underwrite the loan. And knowing the trailing 12 revenue is incredibly weak, it's almost negligible. That part of our financing market has completely, of course, now disappeared. So you have 2021 with about only 60% to 70% of the market available. And of course, within that 70% market, once again, a lot of the players haven't returned yet. They're looking for a little bit more or closer to the light at the end of the tunnel before they will finance. But the financing that are available, just kind of close the loop, have been on deals where the lenders have very good confidence that the collateral or the value of the property before COVID is well above what they're lending to. So if the discount to the acquisition is 30%, if you will, lenders, while they're not seeing cash flow to support the debt, with the proper insurance interest reserve, they will, and they have been lending. We're very active in the market right now, of course, what's going to happen to the sector. So we're kind of, if you will, on the both sides of the trade, meaning we're operators. We certainly own assets on our side. So we have problems on assets that we manage and we own. We're also looking at opportunities that the market is going to present.
We close with advice from John Cheng on what hotel investors and managers should be doing as we enter 2021 and prepare for the year ahead, whatever it may bring.
Owners of every property type, every commercial property type, really should be taking this time to reevaluate their investment strategies, their portfolio, and determine which assets are still going to represent value for them going forward, and which ones are maybe not the best to hold. We've seen a lot of changes because of the pandemic, both in terms of tourism and business travel, but also in terms of migration patterns and where people choose to live, you know, whether or not they're going to telecommute to the office. There's been a lot of structural changes to society as a byproduct of the pandemic. So we're actually advising investors to take this time. Now that the dust is starting to settle, now that we have at least a limited ability to see forward into the future, now is the perfect time to sit down and reimagine your investment strategy for your real estate, because your plans 2 years ago should be radically changed by what we're working on today. And so those things that don't make sense anymore, you should get rid of them, and you can allocate those resources into something that has a stronger growth outlook.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. This is episode 302, and you can find the expanded multimedia report for this episode at lodgingleaders.com/302. Thanks to Rod Clough at HVS, John Chang at Marcus & Millichap, Daniel Lesser at LW Hospitality Advisors, and Joseph Yee at Real Hospitality Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with your followers. There are links for sharing on every page, which makes it super easy for you to spread the word. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast at lodgingleaders.com/subscribe. There are links for subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Radio.com, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. There is no cost to subscribe. All it means is that you'll automatically be notified when the next episode is released. Got a smart speaker? You can stream Lodging Leaders on your favorite device. Just ask Alexa, Siri, or Google to play the Lodging Leaders podcast. And if you're enjoying this show, we'd love it if you'd take a minute to leave us an honest review on iTunes. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I look forward to seeing you next week. Take care and long live lodging.
Thanks for listening to the Lodging Leaders podcast at www.lodgingleaders.com.